All right, we recording?
We are on.
Right, perfect. Okay, Jeffrey, if you're listening to this, this is going to be a living, breathing document. John and I are just going to be talking about the sections. You'll have the outline, so you'll be able to see what the main sections are. But just go ahead and take from our conversation the main points and go ahead and put them into, just the sections and stuff. So basically, we're talking about the roadmap to transition success. And I say 2 years, but I think, John, both of us agree that, honestly, I didn't even think about I got back from Iraq back in, what was it? Was it May or, gosh, it had to have been just 2 months after the invasion. And it was literally, I flew on a United flight from Kuwait City. I mean, and the day before that, we were in Baghdad. So we shot right down to Baghdad. It was very fast because they didn't want any type of IEDs or anything. Jumped on the plane. We were one of the first groups back. I remember that these buses picked us up at, was it Eglin or one of the Air Force bases right there in Southern Cal. All of a sudden, we were bused right back to Camp Pendleton, and our families were waiting for us right there. We were, again, one of the first units back right after the invasion. It was a great way to leave. But within 1 week, because I had been stop lost, within 1 week, I'd started my transition out process. And, you know, I had like 90 days saved up. So I had this 90-day vacation. I think a lot of military guys, they do not think 2 years out before they're getting out, or even a year out, or even a month out. Oftentimes it's like, hey, yeah, I'm just not going to, you know, I'm not going to reenlist. I'm going to, you know, party for 90 days, or I've got all this leave saved up, and then I'll think about it. Does that sound pretty right? Or do you think most guys are planning a year out?
No, I think you're right on, Antonio. I mean, you are at most thinking a couple months out, and usually it is more of that, okay, well, I'm going to have that 60, 70 days that are saved up that I'm going to be using, and, you know, I'll take a little bit of vacation time, but the reality is I'll be able to find a job during that time. And then, you know, next thing you know, poof, I mean, those 60 days are gone, and you're standing there with no paycheck coming in on the first of the month, and you're just like, okay, time to get serious. And unfortunately, you set yourself up for a little bit of failure.
And I think getting back to making the decision, it is something that we do have to make like 6 months or a year, depending on, you know, what service you're in. But in the Marines, as an officer, it was something I had to talk to the comptroller and let them know that, hey, I am going to be transitioning out. There was a point in which they contact you and you've got to make, are you going to, you know, are you basically going to shit or get off the pot? You know, decision here. And I think my decision was made whenever I decided not on the deployment. I decided not to take. We've got this training that you've got to go through in order to pick up major, and the training is basically. I mean, captain, first, second lieutenant, first lieutenant, captain. Pretty much, you're guaranteed unless you really screw things up. But time and grade's going to get you there. Major, on the other hand, you need to have a set amount of training. And I remember I pretty much knew that I wasn't going to stay in. And so I just ignored all the training. Like, it was something that, you know, people are telling you that you need to do. You see other officers going through that training, trying to think about already going to war, off to warfare school, and these other, like, you know, to go become company grade. It was basically, I knew I wasn't going to make that. So I never bothered with any of it. And I think that's whenever I started to make the decision. There was always I could have caught up at a certain point, but I think it was on my deployment whenever I had a major bring me aside and say, hey, you know, aren't you going to do any of this? And it was like, no, that's when I think I made the decision to transition out. But it was something that you think you've got 6 months, you're 6 months out. And then I got stop loss. So then all of a sudden that turned into a year. And, yeah, I think for the enlisted guys, they've got a little bit more. They've got, at least in the Marine Corps, we have usually a gentleman within a battalion, and his whole job is to make sure people are reenlisting, to make sure people are not, in a sense, all of a sudden just their time's up and they didn't sign any paperwork to stick in. So that's something I know with the enlisted guys, they're always, you know, knowing what the guy's future route is. And unfortunately, in an infantry battalion, if you are EASing, is what they call it, then it's you're kind of sometimes given crap jobs, because it's like, well, he's not going to be here in 6 months, so, you know, is going to be the one off doing this or doing that, because we don't want to be investing time into training them up.
No, absolutely. And I just think it really comes back to, you really need to sit down whenever you're hearing this, whenever the thought is entering your mind, whether you're hearing this 3 years out, 2 years out, 1 year out, 1 month out, or even if you're already out. I mean, wherever, whatever situation you're at, when you're reading this, when you're listening to this, you just need to start now on some level and really start getting your act together, really start trying to transition and get some kind of timeline set up with goals and visions that you're going to be hitting along the way to set yourself up for success. Because for me, I know that when I was transitioning out, I wasn't really thinking about it. I mean, I had deployed to Iraq. I had made it back. I was just happy to be alive. Then I started my transition out after my active duty requirement was over at my 4 year mark. And I go down to the office, and this guy just kind of points me to a huge bin and says, "Oh, there you go, Captain. There's a bunch of resumes there you can kind of check out." And it was literally this massive bin of all of these handwritten and typewritten on coffee stain resumes from past officers and enlisted soldiers. And I was just pulling these things out, reading these things, being like, how is this helping me? Like, this is nothing. This isn't me. This isn't relevant. Like, it was like, what am I supposed to like take, like what kind of font they're using or something, and go forward with it? So you can't rely on the Army. The Army is not built to help you transition into the civilian world. They are built to protect this country. They are built to be a fighting force. Everything else is secondary. So you need to be looking within yourself and then looking without to places like this, like high speed, low drag, that can really help you set up that timeline, set up those goals. And
transition us into the open your mind to options section. So I'm going to go ahead and, just for Jeffrey's notes, we have now moved on to open your mind to options. So let's go ahead and, yeah, because I mean, go ahead, John. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay, yeah, okay. So yeah, we're in the open to mind, and I'll just touch back up upon the document your journey real quickly that you did write a couple notes about. Evernote, Google Docs, Word, OneNote. I mean, these are all great resources to use to really get your mind in order, to really start to put things on paper and see them and really embrace them. And then when it comes to opening your mind to different options, yeah, let's start talking about that now, Antonio. I mean, that's really where you need to start opening your eyes, stop having that focus on the next step in the military, and start having to focus on what is really going to be beneficial in the civilian sector.
I think one thing that I want to spend, and this can also touch in veteran psychology, but is honestly for a lot of guys, they stay in the military because they're scared.
Yeah.
They do not, they have had things taken care of. So they've been in the military since they've been 18 or 22 years old. And even if you joined it as 22 as an officer, college was really no different. You were under your parents' umbrella most of the cases, and you just didn't have to worry about life. You did what you were told. You followed a system. You were in with the fish. And yeah, you worked hard. Yeah, you did some amazing things. But you were in with a group. You were always part of a pack. And when you're looking out and going into the civilian world, you are all of a sudden you're a lone wolf. It is frightening, because all of a sudden you're having to reinvent yourself. And there are many guys who they will stay in the military. You know who I'm talking about. They will stay in there for 20 to 30 years, and as long as they can, because they are scared to get out. And you know, they definitely stay in for the 20 years so they get the benefits. But I think the worst case is when I talk to a guy that's at 10 years and he's like, "Man, I just got to do 10 more." He's talking about it like a prison sentence.
I mean, it is exactly how people look at it. It's like, I am just going to sacrifice the next 10 years of my life so that when I do get out, I'm going to have a pretty paltry stipend. I mean, like, they look at this like it's some kind of, you know, jackpot, some lottery. I mean, it's not. It's just, you know, a stipend that you're not even really necessarily going to be able to live on. I mean, you're still going to have to go out and do other things. And you're talking about giving up the next 10 years of your life. So listen, if that's something that you want to do and the military just is your authentic self and it makes you just alive, then by all means, serve our country, do your thing. We love you for it, but don't do it just because you think that at the 20 year mark, you're going to be protected and taken care of, and you're going to be like able to just cruise off into the sunset. I mean, that's not what life is about. Life is about finding what excites you, finding your authentic self, getting up in the morning and getting ready to charge out there. I mean, these are our glory years. I mean, if I would have stayed in for 20 years, I would have got out at 42 years old. Now, that's not old, but that's not young. I mean, right now I'm 33 and I am just in the prime of my life. I am doing exactly what I want to be doing. I'm traveling around the country, around the world, to conferences, to events. I'm speaking to entrepreneurs who I love speaking with. So this is really what I wanted to do. So I wasn't going to wait around and complete what I would have considered a prison sentence. And if you're listening to this and you feel that same way, neither should you.
I think one of the big things we talk about in opening your mind to options, and you talked about it briefly, is do not be limited by these career books. And one of the reasons that we started High Speed Low Drag is because I've bought all those books on Amazon and I've read through them. And there's maybe one or two which are not stifling in the sense of that there's this belief that you have to do what you did in the military. Like, you can't reinvent yourself. That's not something they really talk about. They always talk about, okay, so if you've got a security clearance, well, you should be considering a security job or something that would leverage that. They're always talking about using your background when really, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're in your late 20s, you're in your early 20s, you're in your, you know, your 40s, would you allow your life to be determined? Like, let's say your biggest decision in your life, would you give it to that 18-year-old kid, which you see walking down the street? No, but you know what? You did, because that was you and you made a determination. And I mean, and I didn't even make a determination. I was an adjutant in an infantry battalion, and I'm very proud to have served with 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines. But I was a paper pusher. I was in charge of awards. Yes, I would get out there and I'd do the 20-mile humps and I had my platoon, my group of guys. But I mean, really, when it comes down to it, we were, you know, especially I used to get a lot of ribbon from my, you know, fellow officers that were, you know, the high speed, low drag grunt guys. And it was cool. And I would go out with the sniper team, you know, do fun stuff like that. But I did not want to do what I was doing in the military on the outside. And for many of you guys, that's not even an option. Unless you, I mean, if you were a force recon or you're a Navy SEAL, maybe you can go and work for, I think they've even had to leave the country. What is it, the Blackwater? But there are a number, I mean, yes, there are those type of jobs. And I have friends that do that type of work and they love it. But I think for many of us, it's something that, you know, we'd actually like to not be being, you know, we'd like to not wear armor and not have somebody shooting at us. And we would actually, I mean, there are many, many things that you can do out there, and you're not going to find those options in the career books. Instead, you're going to have to go out there and you have to open your eyes. And one of the things I talk about is subscribing, dropping $100 and getting 10 magazines that are kind of maybe five that you've always enjoyed, and maybe five that are really outside of your, you know, that you've never even thought of. And look at how other people read those magazines with the mindset. How are the people, you know, I'm reading about it, or they're profiling here, how are they making a living? Maybe reach out to those people. But all of a sudden start thinking about, well, how does a research chemist, how does he make a living? Or how does this guy that's running a company selling cameras, how does he make a living? And all of a sudden your brain starts to get working. You realize, wow, you know, this is something that it's kind of interesting. I never would have thought of this or myself in that position. And I can see where I can go in there and kick butt.
I couldn't agree more, Antonio. And the reason why magazines are so powerful and so relevant is because we live in this incredibly fast-paced, moving world. So fast-paced. That book that you just picked up that was published a year ago, there's going to be a ton of irrelevant things in that book that are already yesterday's news, literally. But a magazine, that is cutting edge. That's what people are doing right now. That is what is on the minds. That is sharing success stories. If you're going to read Fast Company or Inc. or Entrepreneur or what's going on right now in the sports world, with Sports Illustrated, I mean, magazines are right on they're living and breathing on the edge of what is going on now. So I feel like that's great advice, Antonio. Go out there. And again, if you're going to be an entrepreneur like myself, don't just buy Fast Company, Inc. and Entrepreneur. Stretch your boundaries. Learn from other genres, other niches, other industries. Really fill your mind up, because you never know. You truly never know what's going to spark that aha moment. You don't know what's going to turn that light bulb on in your head. If you don't have a passion right now, then you need to be getting out there and throwing yourself in all these different situations and all these different industries and niches to try and see what lights your fire, what gets that flame going. And again, high speed, low drag, that's what we're going to be providing. We're going to be providing this relevant information in a lot of different areas. And this next topic we're moving into is about talking with community members and friends that you respect and what they're doing and get some feedback. Ask them how they perceive you, because a lot of times we have these perceptions of ourselves and other people have other perceptions of us. And it's great to get feedback, not just from within, but from without as well.
I think a really key point about this is the speak with people you respect. Don't, I mean, if there's a guy that he's got, let's say, a great paying job, and but at the same time you look at his morals and you look at the way he lives his life and you disagree, you know, be careful about taking his advice, because you don't want to wind up like this guy. And I think a good example for me is talking, I considered very briefly becoming a lawyer. It was either going to be business school or law school. And when I started looking at the mentality of lawyers, I mean, there are some great lawyers out there, and that many of you will go on to be great lawyers. But if you're doing it just for the money, which I found the like a huge percentage of the people are doing it, they get so jaded, they get so frustrated. I mean, it is a profession full of depressed people. They get out, I mean, and you look at just how the law schools were set up, and right now we are in a huge lawyer crunch where these people are graduating with huge amounts of debt. And they are, you know, there's not even jobs for lawyers.
The supply and demand is way out of whack with lawyers. Let me just jump in here for 1 second, Antonio, because I can speak to this even a little more than you, because you considered it. I actually went to law school, and I went to law school not because I wanted to chase that paycheck. I mean, I thought the money would have been good, but that wasn't the reason. It was because I left the military. I left a position in a situation where my family looked at me with respect. They respected the person that I was. They respected the job that I did, and they respected the responsibilities that I had. And so when I transitioned out, I wanted to keep that flame going. I wanted them to still look at me and say, okay, you know, yeah, no, John's no longer serving our country as an officer. He's no longer, you know, in charge of men and tanks and fighting wars, but you know, he's in law school. Like, you know, law school is this great thing. So because of the desire for that respect, I applied. I went to law school and I hated it. Just for everything that you said, I was surrounded by depressed people whose mindsets were just, I'm going to sacrifice now for that big paycheck down the road. You know, I'm going to hate my life in law school. I'm going to hate myself as an associate in a law firm. They're going to work me to death for 10, 20 years. But you know what? Someday I may make partner, and then I'll be making hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I wasn't willing to wait around for that someday. Just like for people that look at the military as a little bit of a prison sentence, you shouldn't be waiting around for that 20th year. You should live your life now. So I cut my sling load, Antonio. I spent a semester there. I busted my ass. I worked hard because that's just my mentality. That's how I operate. But at the end of that first semester, got all my grades back, all A's and B's. I was a success in every level of the word success within law school, but I wasn't a success internally. So I left. One semester, done. I was off to my next adventure, and it felt so good to walk away from law school. It took a lot of courage. It took a lot of swallowing of my pride and my ego to look my family and say, you know what? In a way, I failed because I'm not going to continue with law school. But honestly, I've succeeded in my journey of life, and that has brought me to where I currently sit today, and I couldn't be happier for those decisions that I've made.
Well, I'm just going to say that my experience with business school was friggin' awesome. That, you know, for me, and I was able to go, I mean, because, and this is, again, with opening your mind, I went there because of the positive, I mean, the positive feelings I felt for the people going there. And I was able to get it paid for because using the Hazelwood Act out of with the University of Texas. So I got into a good school, got it all paid for, And it made sense because I knew nothing about business. And that's what I went there for, to open my mind. I did see some people there for the wrong reasons, but I was there for the right reason. And I surrounded myself with people who have now helped me get to where I want in life. Now, moving on to also opening your mind to options, besides and really quickly about magazines, one thing that I love is it's curated content, that you've got these editors who are not – because we're in a world of information overload. So I love the magazines because they really go out there and they bring you things that you would not normally put in front of yourself, and also usually the best. Now, there are online resources. One of them, if you're looking at entrepreneurship, I'm going to recommend Mixergy, Rise to the Top, those sources. John, do you have any that you can think of more for business or more for people maybe looking at a career path? Can you think of some websites or...
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Entrepreneur on Fire. I mean,
that's true.
Just, a top-ranked business podcast that is just interviewing incredible entrepreneurs. But as far as business, there are some great business podcasts and some great business websites, and we'll definitely link those up. I don't want to missay them or just misquote them right now.
Yeah, we'll find those a little bit later.
We'll definitely link those up.
Jeffrey, really quick, jumping back to document your journey. The reason I have that there is I feel it's very important that you make a commitment more than just in your mind. And that's why even putting it on paper is important. You need to see it. It needs to be there. I just got a sign from my friend Pete over at he runs Over the Mountain Signs up in Montana. I met him actually at New Media Expo. Really cool guy. But he has a sign that he just sent to me, which I asked him to make, and it basically says prioritize, focus, systemize, and love. So those four things are kind of what I'm going down it. And I just feel that you got to have it on top of mind. So that was my whole thing with document your journey is you can't just – it has to be something that you're looking at, that you're seeing. So Evernote may be your thing. Paper may be your thing. But whatever it is, put it out there, put it down on paper, and we'll even talk about this a little bit later, but share it with others so that they start to hold you accountable and ask you about it. All right, so veteran psychology. I don't know where this one's going to fit exactly, but I think it's important to kind of lay out some myths, stereotypes, and things that you've got to be thinking as you are transitioning out. One is that actually, so you're going from a population in which 100% of the people are serving to all of a sudden and we're talking mostly for the United States here, but less than 1% of the population serves in the military, and it will define you. No matter what you do, it's usually more, especially if you're fresh out and you don't have, I would say less and less people are finding out I'm a veteran because I don't mention it as one of my top, even though I'm very proud of it. It's just I've got, it's not necessarily relevant to every conversation. But whenever people find out you are a veteran, be prepared for many people just to thank you. And it's always when you first start getting those, it's kind of a bit odd because you're used to, I don't consider myself, a hero or anything. I was just a guy that, signed up and I was surrounded by heroes, and I'm kind of embarrassed at times that people think this high part of me when I know of men that, lost their lives. I know of men that did make the ultimate sacrifice, and I know of men who were much better officers than me. And they're the ones, who really, I think, deserve the praise. Or they were, they were the enlisted or the senior enlisted, kicking my ass into shape. but that is something that less than 1% of the population has served. So be prepared to be defined by that.
Well, Antonio, that's very humble of you. But to take another tact on it, and how I look at it is that, being a veteran is not relevant to every conversation. I do seem personally to be able to work it into most that I have, though, because I do feel like it does denote a certain sense of appreciation. And I do personally consider myself a hero. I consider you a hero. I consider everybody that's listening who has served this country a hero, because you volunteered to put yourself potentially in harm's way to protect this country. And anybody who's listening that has done that, whether you actually did put yourself in harm's way or not, you volunteer to potentially do so. And because of that, you are a hero. And that's my mentality. So whatever mentality you decide to adopt is completely fine. But I've always found positive things come from mentioning that you're a veteran, dropping the fact that you serve the country, because a lot of times there will be people that you're talking to that have Antonio's mentality and they're not going to bring it up either. So you might have this hidden connection that you never knew about, or at the very least, oftentimes, because it is a small percentage, 1% of people serve this country, you know, but oftentimes there is a relation or a cousin or something along those lines to do. So there's always that potential for connection. And whenever you can meet on common grounds, you're just going to receive benefits from that. So, Antonio, I'm not faulting your outlook on that at all. I'm just giving a different point of view, because that's my point of view. And I think that either way you go with to the people that are listening, you can't go wrong.
I think, you know, I've, and here's an interesting example. When I was just in Arizona at InfusionCon, I met a guy, and the connection I made, I read that he was in the Army at a point. And so it was something that I made that connection with him, and I wanted to hang out. I just find that military guys in business, usually we can talk a language which others can't. And so instantly I gravitate towards these people. But one thing he did mention is that he was, you know, was like, you know, honestly, I didn't enjoy my time in the service. He was drafted. He was, you know, he was more of the Vietnam era. And for him, it was something that was, it wasn't, he didn't have a whole bunch of great memories. He has some good memories, but there was also the, you know, being drafted is like a whole nother world. Understand it. And so I think it's important. But the thing is we both shared that life-changing bond. We both realize that life is a lot more than money, because rich men die every day. But it's, I think the great thing about having served and having, especially served with honor, is that we know that, okay, our life will end at some point, but I'm always going to be, and no one can take away from me, you know, the respect and dignity that I have for myself and that I have for others who served, you know, and stood by me. So that's, you know, kind of what I meant there at the bottom is, you know, not everyone's going to love it, but it's something, it is a shared bond, and be prepared to share that bond with others. Now, you are better prepared than you think. And this is these are the little things that we pick up, which are going to separate you. You're not even going to notice them. You're going to notice it when others, and you're going to, you know, don't do this, but being confident, you have leader. It doesn't matter if you were an E2. Well, guess what? There are thousands and thousands of men who technically were lower ranked than you. I think when you've mentioned before, John, you know, even as a second lieutenant, you, especially in the Army or the Marines, you find that you outrank 90% of the people. Now you better, you know, we can lead right into humility and, you know, understanding that, yeah, you're a second lieutenant, but those butter bars do not translate necessarily into experience.
No, the opposite.
But the thing is, yeah, you are better prepared because you have led. You have really led. You haven't just, you know, led a team of programmers to get like a project done in a 24-hour period. No, you have for months, for years, been in high-pressure situations where, you know, basically what's riding on much of what you've done are lives. I mean, it doesn't get much more serious than that. And so you've got confidence, you've got leadership, you actually show up on time. One of the things we talked about in the Marines is, or it was pretty much understood that if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late, which kind of led to the dilemma of, so do you show up 15 minutes before the 15 minutes? And then what about the 15 minutes? So, you know how it is. You show up to a place that you're supposed to be, you know, 3 days before you need to be there, and you sit around and do nothing. No, that didn't happen too often, but I do like multiple hours before the darn thing starts, you know, that punctuality I don't hold myself to anymore, but I do like being there 15 minutes early. And thankfully my son is up with that too, but it's manners. Yes, sir. No, sir. No, yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. I mean, a lot of guys from the South, they grow up with this, but I think simply addressing people with respect, now, even if you don't know them, but you, because of their position or because of their age, you give it to them, assuming that they're going to live up to it, I think it sends a very strong signal. And there are many other things that we do with manners, simply let, you know, from basic table manners to all these other things we pick up. Also, our ability to deal with bureaucracy. There are few bureaucracies as bad as the military. One, because it's so big, but the other one, because it's so antiquated. At least in the civilian world, they reinvest in their admin. I mean, we are still using hand paper documents, and it's 2013. I still see some of this stuff floating around. You're like, oh my gosh.
Right on.
You know, these guys are still from the – there are forms floating around that are from the 1980s and 1970s. Okay, I may be exaggerating there, but I'm sure there.
No, I just think this veteran psychology part is really important because you can use all of the positives to your strengths and you can really learn how to minimize your weaknesses in this section. So this is a really important section that I really think you can dispel stereotypes and you can really, you know, just use that being on time and that respect that you just learn and, you know, the fact that, you know, you had that confidence from just training hard and working and being good at what you do. I mean, all these things you can let get into your psychology, which can just propel you forward.
Well, really quick, talk about the faults, humility, empathy, overconfidence, taking on too much, inability to ask for help. I feel this is something I do. I mean, it's hard to be humble at times because I look around and I look around at a room and when you know you can kill everybody in the room, pretty darn cool.
No, what about when I'm in the room too?
Yeah, that's true. If you're in the room, then I guess, let's not go there, John. I like it. So. But I think it was it Mad Dog Mathis who's now is he Joint Chief of Staffs or I don't know his position now, but he's one of those Marine generals, which I mean, that's what his thing was. Hey, you know, one of his quotes was, hey, anytime you enter a room, you know, be friendly, be cordial, but have a plan to kill everybody. And he was hardcore, you know, and I think that's what, you know, I don't think all of us are this way, but you know, our job in the Marines was to bring, you know, violence to, I mean, was to execute on what we were, you know, on the mission, which often wasn't very friendly. And I think, but we come back into the civilian world, that's not going to work. There's a rule of law here. There are also, you know, courtesies that we afford and how we value life in the civilian world and how you should always value life. But one thing I want to talk about is humility and realizing that, yes, you may be awesome with an M16 and a 9mm and, you know, or with a 50 cal or whatever, but understand that you probably have no idea how to reformat that computer or, you know, maybe even to properly clean a shirt. I mean, there are many skills that you need for life, and for business, which you're going to have a lot of catching up to do. And John, I think, you know, your story of, you know, going into, was it John Hancock and being, you know, knowing that, you know, you're a captain, you were a leader of soldiers. And all of a sudden you're around these 22-year-old guys who their only leadership ability is, you know, be able to show people how to do a keg stand. Yeah. I mean, it's like we're put in those positions and it's hard to not want to kind of be in this really high level. But I think what we have to do is realize don't be arrogant, but lead by example and go out there and just kick, you know, does this make sense or kind of where I'm going here?
Yeah, it was definitely a reality slap in the face when, you know, I got to John Hancock and I'm working next to these 22, 23-year-old, fresh out of college, you know, keg stand frat boys. But, you know, that goes to your humility, you know, to just like saying, you know what, that part of my life is over when I was a captain and when I had the respect that came with that rank and when I led men, that part of my life is over. I'm onto the new stage of life. So let's have some humility here. Let's have some empathy for those around me and let's just work the best that I can within my new surroundings, within a new situation that I find myself in. And when I was able to take that mindset on, which didn't come right away and I suffered for it and I definitely was slower to succeed because of it. But when I finally did take that mindset on, Antonio, that is when I started to find success. So that is to the listeners out there, you know, really look at your inner psychology, look at that and really focus on getting that mindset, your psychology squared away. And you're going to hear this over and over again within high speed, low drag, mindset, 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 because once you do, that's when you're going to really be on the path to success in your chosen field.
I I also mentioned empathy. And what I mean by this is not just having a deep feeling and being able to feel for others. It's something that we are in a culture that you do not show feelings. Especially, I mean, Marines, Army, I can't think of a service branch. Maybe if you were a chaplain, you were to be empathetic. But for us, it was about, hey, you know, suck it up and move on. That was the mentality. You don't, I mean, you just, you had to become like a stonewall to, I mean, and many of you, you know, they have gone through things which both of us can, I mean, we've gone through stuff, but for every time you think your story is tough or you've seen a lot, there's always somebody that has seen more and has had to put up with it and probably has it, you know, bottled up inside. So realize that, you know, you've got those emotions. At some point, they're probably going to come out and, you know, it's great, you know, be able to feel empathy for others, especially in the civilian world where emotion plays a much stronger role. I mean, you will have someone work for you who will break down and start crying. And you can't just tell them to, you know, suck, you know, basically, you know, to fix themselves or to come to attention. You can't do that. You know, it's just not going to work. In addition, we're overconfident. We take on too much. I have done this. I still do this to this day. I think, you know, you've jumped out of a C-130 100 times. Well, that doesn't mean that you can, you know, get that report done in a 24-hour period. You may be able to, but you're going to kill yourself. You're not going to be able to sleep, and then you're going to be crap at work the next day. And be able to ask for help. It's not a sign of weakness to reach out to others who can bring in. And one thing I do, so we'll move on to another section. You need to be able to do much of this yourself. Many of us, I know there are some lieutenant lightbird colonels out there, maybe full bird colonels, generals listening to this. And you've had a staff of sometimes, or you've had a battalion of thousands or a regiment of, you know, thousands and thousands of men. And you had things done. You maybe even had a personal assistant. But here in the civilian world, you know, you're going to have to do a lot of things yourself. You're going to have to, you just don't always have a staff. Even if you were an E3, you had a fire team. And you had, oftentimes, especially when you're first starting out in the civilian world, you are going to be having to get it back to used to doing many things on yourself, from sending out, you know, applications to taking the phone calls. I mean, these are things you're going to have to get used to. And the last thing I would say is understand that people do have the stereotypes. You talked about this briefly, John. Maybe you've got some examples you'd like to bring up.
As far as the stereotypes, you know, as soon as I started finding success in my civilian jobs, you know, people would just run to the fact, you know, of, oh, well, you know, that's his military training. That's because, you know, he was, you know, up at the crack of dawn and working all day and just, you know, knocking heads together. And so it can go both ways. It's, you know, at the same time, you want to be like, well, no, it's because I decided personally to work hard. So there's like this stereotype, you know, on the positive end where, you know, hey, he's having success because of the military. And you don't always just want to, you know, allow, you know, your past service, something that you've put behind you at this point, to be taking the credit for what you've done. So those are some stereotypes that I had to fight through as well, on, you know, a different angle. And it's going to come at you from all ends.
One of the things that I really enjoyed breaking stereotypes, even when I was serving. So I remember when I was in Pensacola, Florida, I was stationed there. And this is actually a tactic for me. At the time, I was a single man, wanted to meet women. I found one of the best things were to go take liberal courses at the local college, because who would expect a Marine to be taking a class, which I did, on women's studies. And when you're there's only two guys in the class and there's 28 women, let's just say the odds are in your favor. And you're dispelling stereotypes.
I like that story.
Yeah, it was a good story. And I had a lot of luck that semester.
So, Antonio, we've talked about exploring your options on some levels, but let's run through this section right now and just really hit it home.
How much time do you have? Do you have another 15 minutes?
I have another 15. Yeah, I mean, exactly 15.
Let's do it. Okay, explore your options. Part of this is understanding what is out there. And this is just opening your mind. Realize that, you know, you go down the medical, legal, academic path. If you're going to go down those paths, then there is a defined path for success. You can't just go and read books in the library and become a doctor. There is a set path to follow there. You can't just go read books and become a lawyer. Well, some countries you can, but here in the United States, you technically have to pass the bar, and there's a few other things. If you want to become an academic in a university, again, there are certain paths for some careers. Business, not so much. There are many, many different ways. So you can further your education, realize you're going to probably have to take entrance exams. So we have, for the LSAT, for the law schools, GMAT. MCAT, for grad school, for all types of grad schools, and what else? The GRE for grad school, and the GMAT for business school. So look at those. They're going to cost you a little bit of money. In addition, you're going to start needing to collect letters of recommendation. It's better to get those as you're transitioning out versus trying to track down those military guys a couple of years out. Make sure you get an address and an email, their home address of some of the guys you want to stay in touch with, because as you know, people move around every couple of years and it's hard to stay in touch. Facebook has made this easier, but don't rely. I find that the physical home address of their parents is oftentimes the best way to stay in touch. Parents don't move for some reason. Specialized training. Make sure you've got, that's one thing that if you're going to further your education, you can go get, if you want to fix air conditioners, there's probably a 3-month or a 6-month course you can go through. There's your associate's degree, which is usually more of a 2-year trade degree at junior colleges that you could use if you wanted to get into drafting or something like that. Trade education, if you wanted to, work as a plumber. One second, let me turn this down. Yeah, trade education. A BA or a BS, Bachelor of Arts, Bachelor of Science, usually Bachelor of Science more into the sciences, mathematics, Bachelor of Arts more of a liberal arts general education, master's degrees, and if you've already got your BA or BS, law degree and MBAs going on to PhDs. So further your education is an option as well, but measure the return on investment. Now, John, we could talk about, and I think this is something that many books talk about, going off and getting all these degrees. But you know what? I haven't seen any talk about how, especially with right now, how we're seeing the education, cost of education having skyrocketed in the last 20 years, and it has not kept pace with what you're getting in return. And that's why we're going to see a huge issue with people coming out owing $200,000 in loans, not being able to escape it, even with bankruptcy, and all of a sudden they can't find jobs
because Antonio, they did. This is something that I'm incredibly passionate about, and it might be another area that we disagree on a little bit, or we probably have a lot of similar ideals about this as well. But I mean, you really do need to look at the value of your education, and you need to look at the value of your time you're committing to it as well. There was a day and age, and it wasn't too long ago, when the only place that you could go to get educated, to actually learn relevant things, was in a classroom environment. And that day and age was not that long ago, but that day and age is in the past. Every single person that's listening to this has an incredible wealth of information at their fingertips. I am a self-taught entrepreneur. I am a self-taught podcaster. My podcast, Entrepreneur Fire, reaches 175,000 people every single month, and it's growing around the world in 145 countries, all coming from my studio in my condo with the skills that I taught myself that was out there available on the internet. So, hey, if you need to go any of those places, if you need to pursue any of those educations that we talked about as far as your JD, your MBA, there are specific paths you need to go. But for anything else, you really need to figure out, is this really going to be beneficial of a time commitment? Because if you're going to give 2 years, when you come out after those 2 years, so much has changed and you could have done so much in those 2 years while you were learning these skills that hopefully you actually do now want to go forward and apply. So really think this day and age when you're looking at what you want to do. Hey, is this something that I can just start right now? I can learn as I go. I can do the OJT, the on-the-job training, and just really focus on honing my own skills and my own passions and be able to pivot and to move in the different directions that are coming up as I'm learning more and as I'm understanding myself and where my real passion and drive lies. So there's just a lot of things you really need to take in when you're exploring these different options. And as you can tell, Antonio, I am huge into the self-taught, self-education, which is free on a lot of levels these days on the internet.
No, I completely agree. You know, I don't know where you thought we would have any disagreement, John, because as everyone knows, me and you agree on everything. But
except who would kill each other if we were in the same room together.
we'd have to figure that one out. But I wouldn't even show up to the room. I would just have explosives waiting for you.
Oh, you are a Marine. I love it.
No, I think side note. We'll talk about that later. But I completely agree. The return on investment, and the problem is that many of our parents, they grew up in a culture in which there was the return on the investment. It was a no-brainer that you went off to college. Nowadays, you have to almost have a master's degree or a PhD to set yourself apart because so many people have these worthless college degrees. My thing is to, again, seek out people you respect and look at how did they get there. One of the things I started as the president of the first company I founded because I founded it and I started at the top. Now, I was also the janitor and I was also the, the designer. I had all the job positions. Just starting your own company doesn't put you on top, but it also puts you on bottom. You get all the jobs. But if whatever you want to do, realize that you don't necessarily, you've got so many things behind you that you don't have to follow the same route as others. And by going down a different path, as Robert Frost talked about, the path less traveled or least traveled, don't remember which one it was. You're a New Englander. You should know this stuff. But he did talk about how
less traveled.
Less traveled, okay, the path less traveled. You can really set yourself apart and you can get to that same area. Don't look at how, it's commander's intent. Look at what your goal is, where you want to get to, and you find the path there. Don't think that, and understand that society isn't looking out for your best interest. Law schools are not looking out for you. Universities are not looking out for you as the individual. You have to find your own path, and that's why it's sometimes so frightening, but also so exhilarating, because you can find a path that's a lot shorter and a lot less expensive and a lot more rewarding.
Love it. Love it, Antonio.
All right. So really quick, I think with our limited amount of time, let's just end on this one, on the commitment to the transition.
Okay.
I think this is something that, this goes back to us talking up there at the top about making the decision to leave. But I think the commitment to the transition deserves its own section, because this is where you verbally and on paper, you start to write out, I have made this transition. You tell your spouse, don't do anything and not tell your wife. I mean, it's not going to work out well. Yeah. I mean, because she or he, their life is probably in many ways, they have sacrificed much to follow you around the world, to be a part of what you're doing. So your spouse needs to be in on this decision.
Let me just sum this up real quick, Antonio, by saying the word here is communication. And nobody ever benefited by not being open and open to communication and being transparent. These are really powerful things. And we all think that, by hiding things and by letting things just kind of simmer behind the background, that somehow it's going to benefit us. Well, believe me, be open, be upfront, be honest, especially with your spouse. You owe that to him. You owe that to her. I mean, that is extremely important to always maintain that kind of open communication with them. And tell your friends, your family, definitely tell your chain of command. I mean, this is really important to note, because these people are really looking out for the best in you, especially your friends and family. And more oftentimes than not, and probably more oftentimes than you listeners would believe, your chain of command too will be supportive and will be really trying to help you if and when they can. But nobody can help you unless they know. You put these things out in the universe, you don't know what great ideals or what great opportunities are going to come back, because your family, your friends now know what you're looking for. So a light bulb is going to go off when an opportunity arises that otherwise they would never think of you.
Yeah, I mean, and we've got so many tools to be able to announce this, especially to your family and friends. And who knows? I mean, many times they're not going to be great leads, but you would be surprised at who your family and friends know. And hopefully you've been building up friends and networking with people who, when you put out there, hey, you know, I would love to get into commercial real estate. Maybe you know somebody who can just sit down with me and talk with me as a transitioning vet about, you know, how this is going to go down. And next thing you know, you were a senior enlisted in the Army, and you sit down with a guy that was, you know, he was a senior, he was senior enlisted, and then he went to West Point or got some type of, you know, commission, and this is a guy that speaks your language, is looking out for you, and that exploratory meeting turns into a, hey, why don't you stop by the office and meet everybody, see what we're doing. You know, we've got like 5 military guys. They would love to meet you. Next thing you know, you have a job lined up within 6 months. I mean, things like this happen.
Absolutely, Antonio. Communication, transparency, honesty. Just make it happen.
All right. Well, I think some research we'll have to do after this. So, John, I think we're through for today because I want you to have plenty of time. But I think if you see right above that, I've got the security clearance myth.
Yeah, and headhunters, job placement.
I don't know a whole lot of, but I see a lot of people coveting the security clearance thing. But my understanding is that's really a lot of outdated info, because any place that requires a security clearance, they're going to do their own checks on you. They don't care what the military said.
So true.
And so I see things like that. And I think this is something where we can, at the very top, talk.